In 1963, Mr. and Mrs. Howard Fallon, I don't think any relation to our Fallons of Wade and Karen, but if they are, you should get in touch with them and tell them to give us some money. In 1963, they gave $200,000, which in 1963, I would guess was a fair chunk of change. They gave $200,000 to the University of Notre Dame. And they gave it, this money, this donation, for a particular and specific purpose. They gave it in order to paint, if you can believe it, a mural, a large, much bigger than life-size mural, to stand in the center of the campus, towering over the entire university. And the mural, believe it or not, 1963, was a depiction of all kinds of sort of academics and scholars and people ranged down one side, on both sides, and then standing, towering over them all with hands held aloft, is the figure of Jesus. Anybody ever seen it? Yeah, Ruth's seen it.
They call him
Testy. Oh, stop! You just spoiled my whole punchline. So they painted this amazing vision of Jesus standing over the entire campus with his arms raised. But what they didn't know, apparently, when they first constructed this great image, was that the place from which it would be the most visible was the football stadium. And it was actually positioned right across from the press box, which has cameras on top, and so every time there was a touchdown, sure enough, there's touchdown Jesus standing there with arms held up aloft over the crowd. Today is Touchdown Jesus Sunday, sometimes known as Palm Sunday. Today is the day when the King is coming. Today is the day when we celebrate the power and the might and the great goodness and presence of God known in Jesus. Today is the day when we get to celebrate the coming of the King who's going to make it all work out for us and make life go the way we had hoped it would go. Luke tells us, as Jesus was now approaching the path down from the Mount of Olives, the whole multitude of the disciples began to praise God joyfully with a loud voice for what? For all the deeds of power that they had seen, saying, "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord." See, that's what we all want. We all want Touchdown Jesus. We all want a King who does deeds of power for us. A King who makes the trains run on, well, who cares about the trains, but we don't have any trains, but a King who makes the sun shine when we want to go on a picnic. A King who makes our lives run smoothly and beautifully. A King who has the power and the willingness to take away the pain and suffering from our lives and from the world. You look at the cover of your pew leaflet this morning, you'll see a little depiction of the coming of this King. I know it's kind of cheesy and a little bit Sunday schoolish, but it makes the point actually quite beautifully. Here is the coming of the King. But what's missing? Where's the crown? Where's his army? Where's this king's great entourage following him and preceding him into the city? Where are the exorbitant signs of might and power that we are accustomed to associating with authority? And what on earth is he doing riding on this ridiculous little animal? I mean, seriously, you call that a charger? You call that a great impressive beast that is going to cast terror into the hearts of the Roman legions? I don't think so. I don't think that's what's happening in this picture. And why is the text that Kathy read a moment ago, why is this text so obsessed with this dumb little animal, with this colt? The whole text that Kathy read is 12 verses. In those 12 verses, five times the colt is mentioned. Go into the village, Jesus says, ahead of you, and as you enter, you will find tied there a colt that has never been ridden. So presumably a young colt, one that is not used to bearing burden. Untie it and bring it here. If anyone asks you, why are you untying it, just say this, the Lord needs it. So those who were sent departed and found it as he had told them. As they were untying the colt, its owners asked them, why are you untying the colt? They said, the Lord needs it. Then they brought it to Jesus, and after throwing their cloaks on the colt, they set Jesus on it. What is it about this colt, this image of a lowly little beast of burden that somehow is supposed to penetrate into our vision of touchdown Jesus? Well, if you go back into the Hebrew scriptures, into the prophets, particularly the little prophet tucked away near the end of the Hebrew Bible, Zechariah. Zechariah is addressed to a time, there never was a time when it wasn't insecure to be Israel. It's always been insecure to be Israel. It's kind of still insecure to be Israel. Israel at the time of Zechariah was ranged on all sides by threatening forces, by intimidation, by the possibility of danger and risk. And they were always looking forward to a liberator. They were always looking forward to someone who would come and rule over their people again, as the great kings of the past, David and Solomon, had done. They were always looking back to, in hope that in the future, another great king would rise up and come to power and bring them safety and security. And Zechariah, in chapter 9, promises the coming of such a king. He says, City of Zion, be full of joy. People of Jerusalem, shout. See, your king comes to you. He always does what is right. He has the power to save. Yes, bring it on. And then he spoils the whole thing. He is gentle and riding on a colt. And the audience goes, say what? We want a king on a charger. We want a king with an army. We want a king who is mighty and powerful and who can do for us all that our hearts long for. And you're promising us a king who is gentle and comes riding on a colt? It's kind of like a bad joke. But the kingdom that Jesus came to bring is not a kingdom in which power is available for me to exert my will over the forces of life. That's not the kingdom that Jesus came to inaugurate. In Jesus' kingdom, power lies not with might and violence. Power in Jesus' kingdom lies with gentleness. Jesus, speaking to his disciples, says to them, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me." And then in one of the very few places where Jesus is self-referential, in Matthew chapter 11, verse 29, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart." Paul, referring to the power of Jesus, says, "I myself, Paul, appeal to you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ." The power that comes in the person of Jesus, and the power that Jesus seeks to unlock in our lives, is the power of gentleness. It's not perhaps the most popular quality in our culture today. And I think the problem we have with gentleness is we equate it most of the time with another word that ends in -ness. Gentleness feels to us like weakness. And who wants to be weak? It feels like vulnerability. And who wants to be vulnerable? It feels like a loss of power. And who wants to be powerless? But if we are going to understand or come to any kind of awareness of what it means for Jesus to be gentle, we have to understand that Jesus, at no point in this story, in the story of his life, at no point was he ever powerless. That's part of what this whole scenario about the colt is set up to demonstrate. Jesus is in charge of this process. Jesus sends his disciples into the city. He says, "Go get me a colt. If they say to you, 'Why are you taking our colt?' just say, 'The Lord needs it,' and they'll let you have it." Nobody is taking anything from Jesus that he is not able to freely let go of and surrender. Later on, in the Garden of Gethsemane, in Matthew's account of Jesus' arrest, Matthew will tell us, "Suddenly, one of those with Jesus put his hand on his sword and drew it and struck the slave of the high priest, cutting off his ear." It's the power of the world. This is what we need to do. We need to fight and defend Jesus. He is about to be arrested, unjustly accused. We know this can't end well. We must do all that we can to fight to protect him. Right? And Jesus said to him, "Put your sword back into its place, for all who take the sword will perish by the sword." When we live by power, power hurts us. When we live by our power to get our way, to exert our control over the universe, we suffer. Look at the world. Look at the earth. Look at creation. Look at our environment. Look at how we've used our power and we've crushed the place we live. Look at how we've abused our power over one another, and we've brought tragedy and pain and anguish into this world. All who take the sword will perish by the sword. And then Jesus asks them this question: "Do you not think that I cannot appeal to my Father, and he will at once send more than 12 legions of angels?" Now, I don't know what it looks like for 12 legions of angels to show up. But what I do know is that what Jesus intended in this image is to indicate that he was not powerless, but he chose to give up his power. He chose to submit to this horrifying destiny that awaited him of unjust trial, of betrayal, persecution, and ultimately of death. See, what we don't understand about gentleness as a rule is that it's not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength. The ability to dominate another is not strength. It's weakness. The ability to exert my will over the universe is not the strength that Jesus came to bring. And so Jesus calls us to walk this path of gentleness. Paul sums up the Christian life in many ways in Philippians, saying, "Let your gentleness be known to everyone. The Lord is near." Because we know that the power of the universe, the power of 12 legions of angels, dwells inside our being, we can afford to be gentle. We have nothing we need to fight for. We do not need to protect anything. We can be exposed. We can be vulnerable. We can let down our guard because there dwells within us a power that is greater and more real and more strong than anything that might ever threaten us. We don't need to build a border wall to keep out bad people. We don't need to hunker down and shelter ourselves against the forces of life that seem at times to be threatening and uncertain, because there is within us an invincible strength, a might that is manifest in gentleness, that is found in yielding, in letting go, and submitting to the power of love. We don't need touchdown Jesus, because there is something much vaster and greater that dwells at the center of our being. And we come here Sunday by Sunday to wake up to that reality, because the world wants to crucify gentleness. The world will crush, do all that it can to crush gentleness, but it will never win. It will never defeat the power of gentleness. It will never defeat the power of stepping back and yielding to the force of life that is our calling as followers of Jesus on the way of the cross. Amen.